Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Oh, what a deal. Hi, friends. Nice to be back. Good to see you. My name is Dean. We had a good show for you today. We got some eclipse fun. We took the eclipse so seriously. Mexico didn't. We'll talk about that coming up a little later on in the program as well. We've got some Alex Jones PP stuff to get to. Alex Jones is making his foray into Canadian politics. I love it. I'm one of those guys that doesn't have a problem with it. A lot of people seem to, but whatevs. We might even get to hot dogs, as always. Joining us on the program, Locke and Cross. Nah, Locke, you there? Do I got
I'm
hello?
There, yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? I could hear you the whole time. Yeah.
Oh, you're such a
I do. I like doing that on Zoom calls with people who I'm doing friendly business with, where you'd be like this.
Hello. What?
Hello.
What?
Hello. Hello.
Yeah.
Like we're not all sick of Zoom calls. It's like, yeah, it's all we do all day still, even though we're allowed to go out and allowed to move around and do stuff.
My wife works from home 3 days a week and then goes into the office 2 days a week. And she has what we refer to as Zoom fatigue. I don't even know if it's Zoom they use, but it doesn't matter. But they call it Zoom fatigue. It's a real thing, right?
Yeah, total. It was technology that nobody knew existed. And as soon as the pandemic started, it was like everybody had to have it.
Did you know about Zoom before the pandemic?
No clue. I did not. No clue. Someone's like, hey, we can do a show on Zoom. I'm like, what's Zoom? We use OBS. And they're like, oh, it's way better than anything else. You got to use Zoom. And by, I would say, year two of the pandemic, when someone was like, hey, Zoom call, let's have a Zoom meeting, Zoom link. I'm like, I can't do it. It makes me sick even getting on a Zoom call. I'm so tired of Zoom calls. And joining us today to talk about that.
You know what I thought was funny was the Zoom beat off. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Everybody was jerking off by mistake.
Yeah, somebody would be, whacking it and it forget to turn their Zoom camera off.
Yeah, and some big names too, like Jeffrey Toobin from CNN.
He's like, they brought him back, and every time I see him, I'm like, "That's the whack off Zoom guy."
Joining us to talk about this and much more, including Hockey Helps the Homeless. This is kind of a treat. I've known this gentleman as you have for about 20.
One of my favorites in the business, 2001? If I'm being honest.
23. I think I've known this gentleman for 23 years since he was 40.
I don't like to do the math.
I'm doing the math now. So he was 40. I was like 20. Yeah, I was like 26. 28, I think. Yeah.
Hockey helps the homeless.
That'll be it. 23 years. The industry that you and I come from, music industry, radio industry, right? Back when radio was cool and they used to break music, you had things in your life called music guys. Now, music guys were record reps, representatives for different companies, Universal, Warner, Sub Pop, that was in the States, all the record companies, because that was the only way back in the day that you could actually become a musician who got paid. You got signed to a major label. Well, that doesn't exist anymore, right?
So anybody what the record reps would do is they'd show up at the radio stations with drugs,
booze,
and give drugs to all the radio people, right? Mm-hmm. Like cocaine only and heroin.
Good,
and stuff.
Only the good and record then, reps, would do that. And it wasn't coke. It was just they would always have a credit card, if you remember back in the day. And I can see the gentleman that we're going to interview here in a second smiling in the background because he knows he's intimately familiar with what we're going to talk about. You would get the credit card. And so you would have like a big star come to town, like a Tommy Lee back in the day or like Kings of Leon. And the record rep would go, hey, guys, great interview. Thanks for doing the interview. Tonight we're going to this restaurant and I've got the company credit card. So come on down. We'll buy you guys booze all night.
Solo stuff. He's got a rap band.
Yeah.
Tommy Lee decided to get into rap.
Anyway, that was a great night, too. I won't get into it. But there are music people, music guys, music girls that you loved. And there were music guys and girls that you hated, right? If you were in the industry. where you'd get people coming in, and like we had one guy that always used to wear a mesh shirt, got a vasectomy when he was like 27, and he'd come in going, "Hey, I got this new record." I'm like, I can't stand that guy. That guy comes in, but there were like two or three people.
Sweaty?
That,
was he sweaty?
Incredibly sweaty. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm sure you do. Anyway, so there were like three or four people in that industry that would come into the radio station, and you'd be so excited to see them because they were just fucking great people all around. They loved music. They loved relationships. They brought booze. They used the company card. They were fucking just beauties. And there was one that stood above all of them.
I would agree with you on this.
All of them. In my history of working with record reps, music reps, people in the music industry, there's one gentleman that I trust more than anybody with anything. And his name is Stephen Cody. And he joins us now. Stephen. What happened to your face?
Age. No, you know, we talked about that in the pre-show.
Yeah. Yeah. When we got on,
If you remember, I had a horseshoe mustache.
You did?
For years and years. And
was it a Fu Manchu? Was it called a Fu Manchu?
No, there's a story there that I probably can't tell even on a podcast. It was when U2 released the album Pop, and I was working that record, and I never did any stunt stuff that guys like I would do, you know, like put on costumes and things like that. But I had been told before that I kind of looked like Edge from U2, bald.
Yeah, a little bit.
And a goatee at the time. Everybody had a goatee. But then Edge did the just to the chin sort of mustache. So yeah. I did that.
Yeah, you had that for years.
Yeah, years and years and years. And then pre-pandemic, I think it was the lazy summer of going to a lot of cottages and hanging out and just, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Just my beard started to grow in and it kind of came in a little bit. So Kelly kind of liked it. And people said, it kind of suits you. And you've had that other mustache for a long time, which I think was a hint to say you look like a douchebag for two decades. And then, of course, the joke that in front of a good group of people, I said, so anyways, I decided, I guess I'm going to have a beard now. And Kelly said, what about me? You already have one.
From what I recall from you telling stories, because I've never met your wife, but your wife is pretty quick, eh?
Oh, she's a beauty.
Oh, yeah.
And not even wife. Like, he's one of those dudes that, like, I remember saying, oh, your wife's so nice. He's like, it's not my wife. You guys have been living in sin for like 35 years.
No, we got married 34 years ago. But we've been together for 42 or 3.
Okay. You and Kelly have. Yeah, again, yep. In the music industry, that never happens, right? You're one of the rare
people. I started out, I was a touring musician.
Yeah.
For the first 8 or 9 years of that.
That's of you not, being with
that's,
Kelly?
That's not that? Good for marriages.
No.
Touring musician, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With a small child at home.
Yeah.
Looking back, might have done things differently.
Yeah.
A couple of random questions.
Yeah.
The music, is that you playing the harp, Locke?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Do you like it? Basically, do you like the intro?
I still play Once in a Blue Moon.
Is this it? This is the one you're running?
Yeah.
That's Lachlan. That's him on the harp. He's like really good at it. I don't play it, so you would know if he's good at it. But
I just went into the studio and recorded. I'm doing a cooking show of all things, and it's called Grease Fire. We just filmed the first episode like a week ago, and I just went into the studio. That was kind of fun. I don't do that very often. I stopped playing. I was in bands for years. Well, you knew that, but because I was with Zimmerman, I was in the Eddie Van Whalen's there, and I was in the Bear band when I was at the Bear. I kind of put the band thing away, but what mornings killed it, because I was on mornings for 9 years before being shit canned a couple months back. But I would play in the evenings and do weekend gigs and stuff like that, right?
And if you're looking for someone to play Kelly's birthday party, he'll do it for cheap now because he's unemployed. I just
want that's what you want. Just somebody standing in the middle of the room with a face piano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awkward. Well, I remember you played harp with Billy Talent.
Well, and I think you had me out with those boys from what the hell was that Winnipeg band? They were a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
Beatles cover.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
It'll come to me.
This is what happens when you get guys who've worked together in some form, way, shape, or form for 20 to 30 years on a podcast after not talking for 10 years.
Rusty. Like,
what was that guy's name again?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Rusty.
Rusty ended up in the Weaker Thens.
It's going to come to me. Yeah. It'll come to us. And then, sorry, part two, going back to how long we've known each other. So, Dean, we would have met when you were in Windsor.
Yeah.
Do we when was that? I came, trace it back. Okay. I moved to Toronto almost 30 years ago.
Okay.
And at that time, my territory would have included Windsor. Okay. But I changed labels a couple of times. So sometimes it's a little hard for me to pinpoint which label I was at. But I certainly remember us putting a busload of people from Toronto when you were here and going down to see Tool at the State Theater in Detroit.
Yeah. We went and saw Tool at the State Theater in Detroit. So I was on the bus. You were on the bus. That was a great music trip. I believe you came to Windsor, too, when I was doing radio there for an Our Lady Peace show, if I'm not mistaken. Were you there
for Our Lady Peace? That sounds about right. Yeah.
You're in the change room. That's where I was. That's actually where I met Rain and the gentleman. And I'm still friends with those guys to this day.
Yeah.
But yeah, you came down there for that. Yeah.
That's sort of mid to late 90s.
The Waking Eyes.
99.
Waking Eyes. Thank you, Locke. The Waking Eyes, an excellent band from Winnipeg.
Driving me crazy. That band should have, I'm sorry to interrupt, that band should have made it.
Yep.
There was a lot of bands that should have made it.
So I failed them.
No, you didn't.
No, you know what? I think the industry, at some point, and I don't know where it was, I remember being pulled aside and being told that I was one of the last guys adding new music and what was I doing? Right? I remember being questioned by my, like, the gatekeepers, the people above me. Like, why are you doing this? Like, why aren't you just following the charts? We got really lazy in the business at some point. And it hurt the business as a whole. Listen, the record business made a lot of mistakes, especially when they tried to sue technology out of existence for the third time in the early 2000s and then lost all their money.
In hindsight, that was funny. Yeah.
When the record companies thought they were a bank and forgot that they were good at being a promotional vehicle for the music industry, that was another. But radio has made multiple mistakes. And that lack of belief in playing something and giving something a chance because – you know, it's good and it's worth it for people to hear that ship sailed. And it's a big reason why radio, in my opinion, is failing so miserably right now. You got nobody that takes a chance on new music. So, and rock lived and died by the people that were putting records on that took a chance on albums. In the Waking Eyes, we're releasing music around the time when that started to become a thing of the past. Am I wrong?
It's probably pretty bang on. Yeah. Yeah. But I think that, the radio piece is interesting because, and anyone would say this, that it's sort of like it's very centralized now, but I think the best way radio works is, like, for instance, when you were at Power 97 and you added records because you thought they were the right records for your station, for your audience, for your market. You know, Winnipeg is a rock town and something might work there that someone in Toronto or Vancouver who was overseeing would go, I don't know about that. Well, you're not in Winnipeg. I do know about that. Right. So you were able to kick back on stuff like that. And that's less and less that happens now.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, smaller market stations that are privately held, or even like in Toronto, Indie 88, it's owned by an individual. It's not owned by a corporation, and they're very, very adventurous musically, and they'll step outside of their format or their perceived genre of music.
You know, but the interesting part, and it's fun having you here, and I want to get to a bunch of stuff. But while we're on the radio and the decline of radio and the shift in the music industry over the past few years, and we kind of led with that, right? Like back in the day, the only way that you could get relevance was signing with a label. A&R was a big deal. You'd have to have people come and see your show, and then you'd meet with someone like you or maybe like a John Davies. And they would go, okay, we want you to meet all these people. that whole model, that funnel in the music industry is gone, right? Obviously, any YouTuber can become anybody. Anybody can come out of nowhere. You got people that are able to put any songs on Spotify and stuff. And so, you know, I don't know if the shift from radio is one of those ones where it's like, hey, listen, music doesn't break here anymore, so no point in doing it. But if you back that off, was your retirement, because guys like us that aren't in the industry anymore don't see a point in doing radio because there's no adventure anymore and the model has changed so much that it doesn't require any talent to do that job. But in your business, the decline goes hand in hand, right, of that industry, and it's because of shift in habits, shift in distribution. So when you look at the music industry now, do you get it? Do you see how it works and why it works? Or are you one of those guys that's like, hey, like us with radio, hey, listen, no interest in that industry because it's not good for me because I don't understand the model anymore?
Yeah. Well, here are some things. I always lead a discussion like this with my disclaimer, which is, fuck do I know? Radio doesn't measure itself well. Like, the ratings are not collected very well. But if you see the right research, a lot of people listen to the radio, and a lot of people actively and passively listen to the radio, right? Yeah. So someone might say, no one listens to the radio. Well, if you're on a road trip, you know, maybe you have something in your car, you're listening to a podcast or satellite radio, which is sort of constant. But I know a lot of people that drive up to the cottage and they listen to their favorite cottage rock station or whatever it is. But you can see research in the right places that people do listen to the radio. And then my friend Paul Levinoff, who owns a chain of radio stations, and again, another great station in Toronto, Z103.5, that plays dance music and always has been a champion of that unwaveringly over the years. And maybe not the highest rated station, but a station that makes money doing what they do in their niche. Mm-hmm. And their measurement is, oftentimes they'll be the only station, or certainly the very first station, to play a song that's not sort of right down the middle mainstream. And maybe it's, you know, a dance track or something a little bit different. And their way of seeing its success is by Shazam. So this is a song that didn't appear on Shazam. Yeah. And 2 or 3 or 4 weeks into Z103.5 Toronto playing that song for 20 to 30 times a week, it starts to show up on the Toronto Shazam charts. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, I kind of can't think of anything else that would have caused that zero to top 20 on Shazam other than 3 or 4 weeks of airplay on that radio station.
You know what's interesting about the about that conversation, I think, I mean, and Dean and I kind of go back and forth about the radio conversation, because I think the issue with radio right now isn't that it's dead and no one listens to it. I think it's being run by people that the gatekeepers that don't believe in it, that aren't putting the effort into it that's needed to make it successful. They're just marginalizing, consolidating, trying to eke as much money out of it as possible. And that's the trend. And it's made its way right across the country and is now eking its way into the smaller market radio stations, the smaller companies. There are still people out there that believe in radio, and maybe they're a little scared about putting their hand up and saying something in a meeting when somebody suggests they voice track all 30 radio stations and put the same guy on middays, right? So I think we're dealing with that right now, but I agree with you. I think there are examples of companies that are doing it and that are successful. And I think we're at a tipping point right now where, especially right now with a lot of the rumors revolving around some of the shifts in ownership, I think there's going to be some companies that actually care about radio that are going to do it right. They're going to make it live again. They're going to put one person in charge of one radio station to oversee the day-to-day, maybe even a music director that oversees the day-to-day, take some chances musically. I think we're going to start to see a little bit of that trend. I have a question for you to shift gears a little bit from the radio discussion. Cody, do you ever see a day when podcasts will be allowed to play music, or do you think the record companies are too entrenched in that the licensing side of things and may keep that away forever?
Good question. I it's bigger than record companies. Obviously it's the publishing companies as well.
Yeah.
I think it's I believe that people need to pay to use music, whether it's in a movie or a commercial, TV show, all of that kind of stuff. Podcasts is a different world. But yeah, it's always interesting to me to listen to, especially if I listen to a music driven podcast and they don't play the song or they only play a snippet of the song. It's a bit frustrating. I don't know the answer to that question, if and when or how it would be resolved, to be honest with you.
The Locker Room on Cryer Media West is brought to you by Ardent Roof Systems. Sign up for the annual Ardent Roof Systems Charity Golf Tournament. Do that today. Spots are filling up. Early bird pricing in effect until May 1st, and there's still room for sponsors. Give Stacy a shout or drop me a line. I'll hook you up with Stacy. Friday, July 5th at the Ranch Golf and Country Club, one of the best courses in Alberta. Your 18-hole round includes breakfast, the famous ranch steak dinner, a massive silent auction, a lot of fun, and a chance to give back to a very worthy cause, the Stollery Child Life Program. This will be the fifth year, and to date, Stacy and Arden have raised over $65,000 for the Stollery. If you're looking for any info or you'd like to register yourself or your team, ardenroofsystems.com. We'll see you there. This is one of my favorite tournaments of the year.
Understand why they wouldn't open it up. Like, that's, you know, we talk about this all the time right here. You can do any show you want. But when it comes to showing people what you're talking about or getting people to listen to something that you're telling them they should listen to, whether it be music or whether it be a file, depending on the platform you're on, you get dinged, right? You know, 10, 15 seconds. And I know everybody wants money, but in the music industry, is there a movement to like say, hey, listen, you know, in certain podcasts, whether it be music podcasts or categories, I don't know about the conversations you have with people in the industry, but it seems like they're saying no to a whole bunch of free promo on top of figuring out any kind of revenue model to use music and podcasts or any digital, some kind of digital performance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but again, the free promo bit, if you go back to radio, it's promoting the artist, but the monies are flowing, right?
Yeah,
the radio stations are paying to play that music. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think that's if you make an exception for someone, I don't know if that's right or wrong, but that seems logical.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen anytime soon. I think right.
No, I don't think so either. I don't think so either. It's just kind of silly because it kind of handicaps people that are doing this stuff. And there's this real relationship. And at some point, there's got to be some sort of agreement you can make as an individual. Or maybe with a podcast host company. And we just joined Acast the other day. And I mean, these are ongoing conversations you have with people about making podcasts more accessible or making that digital content more accessible and working with the music industry. But it's so difficult now because everything has changed, right? How is it different now for you when you talk to people in the music industry, right? You come from a time where you had reps, you had people that would go and find bands and stuff like that. With YouTube and digital and on demand, you don't need that. TikTok, you can go from being a TikTok star to being a, you know, someone that sells out Wembley. Mm-hmm. So like, what do you see in the music industry now in terms of that music business being able to serve the music industry?
Yeah, it's a little bit the same and a lot different all at once. There's the record companies now have people that in a traditional A&R role of discovery and development of artists, they're scouring the internet for things that are spiking on TikTok or YouTube or whatever. They're finding that, almost like with using AI type technology.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of brings them in. And then things that are just phenomenons, you know, like people being discovered on YouTube or TikTok. You just mentioned it, like they blow up very quickly. Mm-hmm. An awful lot of them come and go really, really quickly because there's no there, right? So someone can get on TikTok and do something that's like blows your mind. Mm-hmm. And then they're brought into a situation where, what else do you have? Have you ever performed live before? And they just don't have the toolkit. They literally don't have the toolkit to follow.
Have you encountered that where you've checked into somebody online and you're like, these guys are really good. This person's really good. Then you bring them in, you go, hey, that's a song I have totally engineered. And I don't have any other songs and I've never performed live. And I did this like five months in my basement. So that's the finished, like, you know, or, what I mean? Almost like getting catfished in the music industry.
Yeah. Or you sign them and they go on stage for the first time and have a mental breakdown.
I'll answer it in a different way because it wasn't something that we encountered in Canada so much, but we obviously in Canada, we represented the labels from around the world. Mm-hmm. So anecdotally, someone will come in and say, okay, in the marketing meeting, okay, the LA office has just signed this artist. They have 800,000 million views on TikTok and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And they've got this song and they're going to rush it to radio and they're making a video and this is going to happen. And it becomes the priority. And so sort of like all hands on deck, fire drill, let's get this out there. And of course, you're working on tons and tons of other domestic and American and international acts at the same time. But you've been told, we got to get right on this one. And without exaggeration, 3 weeks later, you'll be in the same meeting and that person's name doesn't come up. That artist's name. Next.
Yeah, because it got rooked.
Because whatever. Just there was no there.
They realized also, when they brought him in for the staff meeting to play in front of the staff.
At lunch, remember when you guys used to do that?
On the side of his head, the size of an apple.
You'd bring in, I remember Cody would bring in like sandwiches and soup and stuff like that. And you'd have some burgeoning artist come and play in the boardroom. And that's when the separation begins, where the guy's like, I don't know if I can do this. And you're like, dude,
see the guy sweating.
Yeah.
Clearly tweaking because he couldn't find cocaine when he hit the Toronto airport.
These are nice. You're going to go into a room with a bunch of really nice people. It's going to be chill, just like with your friends or whatever. Yeah. I've never done this before. I'm scared.
You know what's funny? I think about this conversation for me is because I'm remembering all the Cody stories, and I'm guessing that you have a lot of stories you can't tell. But even before we were on, Dean was like, "We got to bring up the kid at the urinal story." I've even heard this story, Cody.
Yeah, I don't know. Like it.
I don't know if you can tell it anymore.
I don't think I can tell it anymore. I don't think I can tell it anymore.
Do you ever? Because you remember back when we were friends and we used to hang out sometimes.
Yeah.
And you would tell me that, you told me that story, and I remember laughing so hard. And then 10 years go by, and I see you, and you look spectacular, by the way. And I'm like, oh, let's get him to tell the story of the kid at the urinal at Maple Leaf Gardens and what his wife said after. And,
oh, dear. Yeah.
And then I tell the story to Lachlan, and I'm like, I don't know if you can tell that story in 2024.
This seems like a...
I'll tell a Cody story.
No, let Cody finish. I want Cody to finish.
No, I feel terrible because it is a phenomenal story, but I can't tell it. So people are sitting there.
Okay, move on.
What a bunch of assholes teasing a story that's one of the funniest stories ever, and now they're not going to tell it.
Yeah, no, we can tell this story. This is a pretty decent one.
How about this? Just do the punchline. Just wait before we get to this story. Just do the punchline. And that's when your wife said.
And I got home and told my wife the story. And after she stopped laughing, she said, "Did you get his number?"
That's awesome. So Billy Talent signs to Warner Music Canada, and you're going to introduce him to a bunch of radio idiots. So Cody plans this trip to Vancouver, to Whistler. And Billy Talent was playing in Whistler at the bottom of the hill. And so we all flew, we met, got in a van, got to Whistler, saw the band, went out, got shit-faced. There was some concert in Vancouver the next night that we were all supposed to go to as well. Not important, but whatever. I think you had tickets for something for us. So we were supposed to meet in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Pretty intense trip. And the morning that we were going back to Vancouver, it was a quick trip. We're all downstairs getting ready to meet, and everyone's pretty hungover. And I'm standing at the front desk, and I'm going to use his name. We don't have to use his last name, but this guy, Phil, who was also on the trip with us, who worked in Toronto, I believe in the promotions department at the Edge, came running down in his towel. And he's standing in the middle of the front desk area. I know, and he just starts yelling. He goes, "I have had an accident in my room and someone needs to come up right away." So someone from behind the desk runs up with him, and he's in top. They run up the stairs, and I'm like, what the hell went wrong? And I go into the bus, and I sit down, and I said, I think it's going to be a minute, guys, because Phil, I just saw him yelling in the front desk area of the hotel in a towel. Cody comes in. He's really frustrated and obviously distraught about 5 or 10 minutes later and says,
you remember this,
we've got an issue. Got an issue. It's going to be a minute, guys. So literally 15, 20 minutes later, we all get in the bus. No one's saying a word, and everyone's like, we have a very quiet trip to Vancouver. Cody, who is a very jovial, very funny, very communicative guy, Cody's not saying anything.
That's when
I don't
worry.
Remember that part.
Oh yeah.
Phil,
no.
You were angry. You were really angry. Phil had to get the bus to stop 2 or 3 times to throw up. He was still pretty hungover. We get to Vancouver and I got it out of him. Finally, Cody opens up and he goes, Phil did $25,000 worth of damage to the hotel room. So I'm dealing with that. You'll have to find your own way to the venue and get your tickets and all that. So when he was in the shower getting ready to leave, he was apparently leaning up against the wall, not feeling very good. Mm. And he slipped and he fell. So he grabbed onto the curtain of the shower, pulled the rod out of the wall, somehow swung around, grabbed the towel rack, and while he was falling out of the tub, swung and punctured a hole in the toilet. So now we got water running down 2 floors. And he didn't know how to turn the water off on the toilet. So Cody takes a bunch of loser radio people to see a new band and is already paying for flights and food and accommodation. And then there's this $25,000 bill to repair the plumbing, the entire plumbing in the shower.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
Is that a true story?
It's a true story. I didn't remember. I don't remember the logistics of how we paid for it. I'm sure we charged it back to the band, though. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
But that's the kind of shit you had to put up with all the time, right? Because you know this to be true. Like when you go out with radio people, you're not going out with the most controlled or disciplined individuals.
No. Who's dumber, musicians or radio people?
You occasionally would get it was always fun to do that. Like if you when you had the budgets and you had the approval to, like, we really believe in this artist, let's fly some people somewhere to do something, or bring them into Toronto and put them up in a hotel and take them to dinner and do these things. It's really good, and I think it's an important thing, and it makes the radio people feel, you know, that they're just appreciated, and they are. But I couldn't count on 2 hands the amount of times that someone would get into a situation like that and, like, completely go off the rails.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's an open bar, but that doesn't mean you need to drink 17 beers.
Can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. Did you ever, because I don't remember, was I ever one of those guys?
No. The story that comes to mind, back to going over to see Tool, and you were in Toronto, right? So we went down on the bus, we stopped in London and picked up some people, and maybe also St. Catharines, I can't remember. Anyways, but you and I got off in Windsor to visit some friends there and maybe have lunch or something.
Yeah.
And others were upset that we weren't staying with the group, even though we were just 2 of 20 people or something.
Well, but let's be fair. I mean, we didn't want to hang out with those people.
I wasn't going to say it that way, but the story I remember is that they got there, and because they didn't have us there, or more specifically you, who knew the area and had some, you know, street smarts. Mm-hmm. Someone directed them into a field to park the bus. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this vest. Oh, yeah, park back here. Over here. Yeah, no, come on. And told them it was $150 or something to park the bus in this field.
Yeah.
And they gave him $150 US, and the guy just walked away. He had nothing to do with any sort of parking or the event or a bus. Like, what?
So they didn't get a receipt.
Well, the best part was the bus driver's like, I'm not paying it. And then all the radio winners and record people had to ante up US money. And everyone's like, I don't have any US money. So they sent people to go get US money. We came back from a delicious tunnel barbecue lunch.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was incredible. All sauced up with ribs. I think I had about 16 drinks because I was a radio guy. I remember. And I'm like, Cody's paying. Let's have gin. And then you get back, and they're like, where the fuck were you guys? And Cody and I are like, we just had lunch with, like, normal people. And they're like, well,
yeah,
we just got taken for 150 US. Some vagrant told us to park. Took our money. And now we have to move the bus, so we're out 150 bucks.
I'm out of work now. I might start doing that at Rogers Place.
Do it around Rexall for Oilers game, right? That's like great.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that's funny.
That. I remember that. You're retired now, though, dude. You're done, right?
Almost a year ago. Yeah.
You should tell the story about the kid at the urinal.
No. No, not yet.
Can't do it.
No. Yeah, I think you should.
You're retired. No one cares.
Did you retire because you were ready to retire? Or did you retire because the game changed? Or did you retire and just say, I'm going to slow down and consult now with this sweet Letterman beard?
I just retired.
What is that? What kind of explanation is that, Cody?
And now I had dinner last night with a friend of mine who works in the industry, because I'm tired of being retired, so I'm going to start. People have been calling over the years saying, hey, would you be interested in this? Could you help us with that? Whatever. So I feel that I'm going to start doing that, because mostly I'm not ready to be retired.
Yeah. Is it one of those things where you're like, I'm going to try it, see what it's like?
Yeah.
And you don't like it? Is that why you're getting back?
Yeah. I mean, so I was a touring musician from when I was a teenager, and then I got a job in the record industry and did that for 30 years.
Yeah.
And so the first thing was, I hadn't had a summer off since I was 14. So I had the best summer.
Yeah.
And then, Kelly and I went to Australia for a month, which was kind of cool. Awesome. Yeah.
Isn't your daughter in Australia? Isn't she teaching or?
No. She had been there a little bit a long time ago. She had done some traveling when she was modeling, which was not a very long period, not a big part of her life, but she did spend some time there.
Oh, okay, that's what it was.
Anyways, then it was the holidays. But since the beginning of the year, I'm just like going, what am I doing here? Mm. I love walking the dog. I never played so much hockey in my life, but I missed the game. Like whenever I went out to the Junos in Halifax. Mm-hmm. First time ever as a sort of a free agent, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it was just great. Like just to be around industry people, radio people, artists, that's the part of that I really missed the most.
Dude, you're not going to find anybody in the music industry that knows of Steve Cody or has met Steve Cody who won't say the same thing, right? Like that might be the best relationship person I've ever met.
But also, I want to jump in here quickly. I also remember feeling the guys that gave a shit about music, which is why I got into the business. They were sadly not as many as you would think that were in the business. Because in radio, it kind of gets beaten out of you a little bit. And in the record business, it gets beaten out of you as well. Cody had a passion for the music and the projects that he, and you knew that when he showed up and he was,
it wasn't a job. Yeah.
It was a job, but he was pushing stuff that he actually believed in. And you know, you told the company line and you told a story about, oh, that's a priority, but you knew if you were sitting down with Cody, I was a music director, I was a program director for a period of time. Cody would not pull any punches. He would tell you that this is a band you need to listen to. And so I trusted that opinion, and there weren't, not everybody that came through that worked in the record business had that same passion for the music.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And certainly your remarks off the top of this were embarrassingly flattering. To say that I liked every artist that I was asked to represent or a song that I was asked to push to radio, et cetera, I mean, that's just not true. But I understood why it was a priority or why the artist got signed and why we needed to give it a try.
Yeah,
I would not inject my own, I don't think this is very good or it's not my style of music. That was never part of my thought process. And I also learned very early on to pick your battles. You know, there are stories of people that worked in this industry, and you would know them,
yep,
that they would come in every week and everything was important. Mm-hmm. You needed, this is a pressure. This is a, and it just, that's just not the way it is. A radio station is going to add 2, 3, 4 songs a week. If you're lucky, if it's a current based station,
yeah,
you got to pick your battles. Yeah. You got to pick your spots.
Locke might not add the Killers in Winnipeg. Just may never happen.
He never did. Mm. He was like from what I hear, Lachlan was one of, if not the hardest program directors to ever deal with. Is that true?
Not from my perspective.
The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by FactCheck.io. FactCheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. FactCheck.io. Back to the show.
Well, Lachlan says it.
Well, no, my personal experience is always
patient. That's all.
Well, yeah, but I'm not going to go back to my hotel and start crying if I've come to visit you and presented something to you and it's not your cup of tea, or if I'm calling you and working you on stuff. And
yeah,
what you would do, right or wrong, is you just give me, you wouldn't bullshit me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right? I don't have time for that.
Right. I'll never forget this. I'll tell a quick story. When I worked at Sony and I was the manager for Ontario, and at the time that one of the bigger stations in Toronto was called Mix 99. And I knew the guys that programmed it, JJ Johnson and Wayne Webster, like a great PD MD partnership.
Combo, yeah.
Yeah, and just whatever we were releasing on Sony was just letter perfect for that station. It was when Tal Bachman had his big hit, and we probably,
She's So High.
Yeah, I mean, everything we released seemed to be letter perfect for that station. And we released a song by Neil Finn from Crowded House, Split Ends fame. And of course, that station had played both of those bands during their career, or certainly played a lot of their songs in recurrent and gold rotation. And so Neil Finn had a solo record, and the single was really, really good. And it was very, very sonically friendly to the station. And I really wanted them to play it. I couldn't get them over the hump. And I tried everything to do, like, even if they don't know who Neil Finn is, all you need to do is say, this is the guy who sang these songs for Crowded House and these songs for Split Ends. And sonically, and anyways, I sat down with a bunch of the radio programmers in Toronto, like the Stu Myers and JJ Johnson and whoever else was there, and a couple of my bosses. And we were telling this story. And I said, that was the one record in a year that I felt that we failed at that station. Cause I think they added just about everything else that we released. It was the perfect synergy between the station and the songs we released that year. Mm-hmm. So Stu Myers, our friend who programmed 102.1 The Edge, said, give me the pitch, give us the pitch, and we'll let you know. So I told that exact story about what bands he was in, et cetera, et cetera. And they all went, oh, it's a pretty strong argument, I got to say. Stu goes, you're forgetting one thing, though. I said, what's that? He goes, it's not your fucking radio station.
I love Stu.
Yeah, that's an honest relationship. Stu would always tell people the truth, right? He's sort of like Lachlan that way. And in that business, you don't get a lot of that.
Yeah.
Now you're retired.
no longer in music, but you might be getting back into music, which is good. I think you should, because your reputation is sterling. And I think it's I think more good people in the music industry, the media industry, is a good thing. But you've been like busy helping with Hockey with the Homeless. Is that what I understand? You've been
one of the things
you're one of those, you're one of those like rec hockey league warriors, by the way. A lot of people.
I have been. I used to play for a long time. When I came to Toronto, I met up with all these guys that worked at different record labels, because we all know each other. Mm-hmm. And they had a team in what is called here the ASHL, the Adult Safe Hockey League. Badass. But ASHL could also be like an acronym or a shortening of asshole. because at 9:30 on a Tuesday night in a beer league game, and someone, the goalie freezes the puck, and someone two hands his trapper, and then I've got to push him out of the way, and then he cross checks me in the face, and then I have to try to explain to him that I'm pretty sure there are no NHL scouts here tonight, and if you win the game, you don't get a trophy. Like, it was just, and then I was getting older, and these kids were getting younger and dumber.
Yeah.
So
most of them are drunk on the bench too at rec league, right? You know that.
I played with a guy. He would show up. He'd smoke a joint in his car, and then he would go up to the bar, and crush a beer, and then go down and play a perfect game of hockey. And I'm like, dude. But yeah, some guys are out there half cut. But I played a lot of hockey. And I found a program that's kind of an instructional thing where you go, it's adult, and you have an hour of practice and then an hour shinny, and it's all coached and there's no bullshit. And there's, you know, and I play a lot of outdoor shinny during the winter here.
Oh, that's awesome.
Pick up games. Yeah. So I enjoy that. But except for the pandemic, for the past several years, we've been taking part in this tournament called Hockey Helps the Homeless. Mm-hmm. If you look it up, just search Hockey Helps the Homeless.
That's Scotty Page, right? He runs that. Scott Page?
That I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, it's national, and you can just, if you go on their site, you see all the cities and towns and areas that do these tournaments. I've been playing in the tournament here called the Bay Street Tournament. Mm-hmm. And I'm on a team that's sponsored by the radio station Boom 97.3, Stingray Station. They are also the media partner or media sponsor of this tournament.
Does Parsons play on the team?
He does not. Steve Jones sort of leads the team. Jones is now the president of Stingray Radio.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the big swinging dick at the Stingray Cracker Factory now.
He is, for sure, yeah.
You bet.
And Steve Parsons is now the VP programming nationally. So they sort of, Steve Jones moved up, and then Parsons moved up into Jones's role. So they're heavy hitters at that station. So Jones is the goalie, and he's the captain of the team. They sponsor it out, which takes pressure off us to raise money, although a bunch of us still have raised a lot of money. The team, last time I checked, was the third – had raised the third most money thus far. And
what's the date?
Saturday, April 20th.
20th.
Saturday, April 20th at Scotiabank Pond here in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And you play three games. Our games are, you play at 10 a.m., 12:30, and 3 o'clock or something. There's a lunch. There's an event afterwards. Each team gets to draft or is assigned at least two former NHL players or Olympians. There are some former members of the Canadian women's Olympic team. And it's pretty good. It's good fun.
Do you know who you have yet? Or the draft will come?
The draft is next Thursday.
Okay.
But in the past, we've had Rick Vive and Bernie Nichols.
Awesome.
That's a lot of NHL goals right there.
Yeah, tons.
Yeah,
that's a ton of NHL goals. Like probably close to 800 NHL goals.
Doesn't LaRocque come out for this too?
So George LaRocque was our guy the last 2 years.
Yeah,
okay,
he's a beauty too, isn't he?
He is a beauty. First of all, he is gigantic.
Yeah.
But he is the nicest, funniest, most easygoing, best guy in the locker room and on the bench and on the ice. Now, mind you, like any other tournament like that, there are guys out there taking it too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, like we were down 5-1 in the game, and the team scored the sixth goal, and the guy did a big celly down the ice. So George had to go over to the other bench and talk to their NHL player and say, you know what's going to happen if this guy does that again, right? There's a little bit of that edge in it. But the best story is
this.
The best story is, and I'll tell this story, and I will mention his name.
Yeah.
Is our mutual friend Warren Kopnik. Mm. So Warren is the longtime head of radio promotion at Sony Music Canada. Good friend of ours. Golf.
Another beauty. Hopkins.
Yeah.
Great guy.
So on our team, Warren and I have played D together on the earlier team in the Asshole League, as I told you, and in pickup games. And certainly since I've retired, Sony sometimes will have pickup hockey and I'd be invited to play with them. So like we have great connections over the years playing hockey together and oftentimes playing D together. So 2 years ago, George Laroque comes on our team, says he wants to play D, who wants to be the partner, and I started. So for the first game, I'm playing out there on the first D pair with George Laroque, which was surreal. And we had a pretty good game. We ended up with a 3-3 tie. And then the next game, he goes, okay, Steve and I had a good game. Who's going to play D next? And Warren, you come. Second game, Warren and George played together. We didn't have a strong game. The other team was really good. George was really chirping Warren, pass the puck. And we'd get on the bench. He's like, what are you doing? Kind of grinding him a little bit.
Seriously. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, no, but it's just he wants everyone to do well.
Yeah, yeah.
Third game, who's going to be the next D partner? And Warren says, I know, George. I know you don't want me to be your D partner because I'm shit. You don't want to play with me again because I'm shit. No, Warren, don't say that. No, I know I'm shit. Warren, please don't say that. You're not shit. Shit is better.
So we'll take the link, Cody, the link for your donations. Is it all separate? Everyone's raising money individually?
Yeah. But I mean, yeah. So if you could use my link, I much appreciate that.
Yeah.
It goes to the team and ultimately to a foundation in Toronto called Eva's Place, which is specifically looks after homeless youth.
Perfect.
So
that's awesome. Yeah. Good for you, man.
I'll tell you what, there's a guy on our team, Todd, who signed up as an individual and then was then kind of assigned to our team a few years ago. And he's raised over $10,000 or $11,000 or $12,000 himself.
Oh, that's insane.
And But the story is he's from Toronto. He's been living in Florida a long time. He has a brother who has mental health issues who is homeless.
Wow.
And so his way to help, to give back in any way, is to raise a lot That's of awesome. Money, play hockey with these dudes to raise money for homeless people.
That's awesome. Yeah. And Hockey Helps Homeless has been kind of that cool engine that continues to move. You see a bunch of NHL alumni, captains of industry, raising money to spend a day together to legitimately help people. Plus, in Canada, we take hockey as seriously as war, and it doesn't matter if it's rec league. So you know you're going to get some fireworks if you want to go and help. But I've got this. If you go to evas.ca, you can actually get to the link there. Hockey Helps the Homeless. Base Three Term is back in support of Eva's. The event details are there. Again, evas.ca, evas.ca. We're going to put the link to Cody's team in the actual description of the podcast so people can go and donate. Like everybody that's got a heart, like everybody that wants to give back, Steve Cody is one of those guys that puts his money where his mouth is, and really appreciate you coming on to talk, not just about Hockey Helps the Homeless, but a little trip down memory lane, a couple of stories we can and can't tell. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I do need you to confirm one thing, Cody, before we let you go, because I've talked about this before. So there was a period in time when I was doing those world album premieres, the WAPs for Canada. I was on the list of like Alan and Dunner and I, and a couple of other people would do them. Yep. And you shipped me down to Chicago. And while I was in the hotel room preparing to go to the listening party, you phoned me and said, Lachlan, what did you do? And as it turns out, I had given the CD that you sent me that didn't play for me to a kid to get the music off of it so I could listen to the new Disturbed record, 10,000 Fists, on the plane on the way down so that I could formulate some questions for the band. And the kid went online and put it out on BitTorrent, and it was watermarked. And I said to Cody, I said, oh, that doesn't sound very good. And he goes, no, it's not good at all. Like, this is a really bad thing that happened. And I said, well, what should I do? And Cody gave me the worst fucking advice I've ever gotten from anyone and said, well, listen, I'll try to keep it under wraps, but go to the listening party and just, like, let's just pretend it didn't happen. So I hopped in the fucking cab. I went to the middle of Chicago, got out of the cab, listening party. The band's playing their Genesis cover, Land of Confusion, for everybody that was on the record. And as I'm standing there, I get grabbed by four huge men, and I get thrown down a flight of stairs and told to leave or I was going to get killed. No, I'm dead serious. I'm dead serious. So I proceeded to get into the cab, went home, got on a plane, and never did the world album premiere for Disturbed. Now, there was a lot of stuff behind the scenes that happened.
Is that a true story?
Yeah.
You leaked the new Disturbed album. Cody is sitting here laughing about it. Has no idea that they whooped your ass down the stairs when you got there.
Oh. Hold on. One of the things that happened after that was that that record became huge. It was about a month. It was floating around for about a month on BitTorrent sites before it was even released, because I was down there in August and wasn't supposed to come out until September. I remember all this very clearly. I might even have PTSD. Anyway, a couple of years later, I get a call from somebody from Warner Music, and I think it might have even been you, Cody. I can't remember who told me this, but because I started to see records getting leaked on purpose. Bands and record companies were doing it as a promotional stunt. And somebody informed me that my screw up with this kid that worked at the radio station that was really good on computers may have been the impetus for the leaked record. So Lachlan Cross is actually responsible for leaked records based on the success of Disturbed's 10,000 Fists.
Well, listen, I didn't hire those guys to throw you down the stairs.
It's okay. Well, I got over it.
It went high, you know, like my boss, Steve Kane, was involved and they wanted people fired. They wanted me fired. They wanted John, whose CD it was, fired. And, but cooler heads prevailed. And wanted you fired. It was the international guy at Warner who sort of got everyone together, say, okay, everyone, like, basically said, nobody's going to fucking die today because of this. And is it really a bad thing that this is out there and it's kind of controlled and it's not the type of band that something like this would normally happen to, like a leak like this? And at the end of the day, like you said, it was like a huge success. It didn't hurt it. It probably helped it. And I wouldn't be surprised if people went, remember that time we got really upset about that leaked album? Might be something there.
You're welcome. You're welcome, but, record industry.
I mean, up until a year ago when I was still working, they would circulate music. And I have some here. I have, I'll tell you, my daughter, we were talking about, I would come home from work and have, like, in the early days, a cassette of music that wasn't released yet. You know, there's these bands called Sheryl Crow and Gin Blossoms. And
yeah.
I didn't know who they were. And the Cranberries. And then we would get CDs that were watermarked with your name on it. So if it got out there, it got traced back to you. And I got how that had to be protected.
Yeah.
Early days at Warner, I got an advance CD of a Missy Elliott song. And I played it for my wife and daughter. Unbeknownst to me, my daughter took it to school for her hip hop dance team, who were about to go into a competition with some other hip hop dance teams from other high schools or junior highs, middle schools where she was.
Yeah.
So they rehearsed to a Missy Elliott song that had yet to be released, and then went in the competition, and everybody was doing the same sort of hits of the day and have all these moves, whatever. And then it's time for Lauren and her Don Mills middle school team to come out, and they played a Missy Elliott song that no one had ever heard before.
As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, and alternative sources. And there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today. FACTCHEK.io. FACTCHEK.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, FACTCHEK.io.
No, and you know what? No one died and no one died. Got fired.
Did anybody get thrown down the stairs?
No one got thrown down the stairs.
That's the way the music industry works.
By the way, somebody did get fired out of that whole thing. I believe the kid got fired. If I remember correctly. But reassigned. They didn't fire me.
Reassigned.
You're right. That's right. They moved him to the station upstairs, and I think he had to produce Adler.
Like, it's like no one wanted anyone to get fired over that.
Which is like punishment.
No, but I think what it was is they decided what he did was wrong.
Yeah.
And apparently had a history of doing, of not doing that, but of file sharing, things like, you know, putting out music that was, Right.
Yeah.
So it was not fired, but okay, we're going to move you over here where you don't have access to do that and therefore bring liability on your employer.
It's too tempting for you to have access to certain files. We need to move you into a place where you just produce commercials.
Well, I remember the funniest part of the conversation I had with Cody in the hotel room while we were deciding how to go about the rest of my trip down to Chicago to do the world album premiere for Disturbed's 10,000 Fists was, I think at one point I said, "What's a BitTorrent?" And Cody went, "I don't fucking know what a BitTorrent is." I don't know what a watermark is. Yeah, none of us knew what the hell any of it was.
Yeah, what's a CD?
Remember those?
Remember when you come in with a CD?
You'd come in and go, "Hey, I got a CD for you, Dean." Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, I miss fun those stuff. Days. Good stuff.
Do you still have access to the company credit card, or is that done?
No, that's done. Although the funniest thing is probably 6 or 7 months after I retired, I got a piece of mail came in from Amex. Mm-hmm. Like, that's funny. Open it up. And my bill was 2 months past due. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. I turned that card in 7 months ago. Someone forgot to cancel it. And so there was an annual fee attached to it. And the annual fee... I didn't see it in the original.
Oh, it's too bad you didn't know about that.
Yeah. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
Could have had a party.
Oof.
Yeah.
I couldn't take you guys out to a dinner at the Keg or something.
Yeah. Oh, the Keg is light work, dude. We would have gone someplace else like Harbor.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. When you get that free music credit card, that's awesome.
Well, the last time I did that, by the way, cause it's very rarely done for the past many, many years.
Oh yeah.
But I worked the last Nickelback record, and we did what we used to do. We flew a bunch of people to Vancouver to have dinner with Nickelback at Gotham, which is like super expensive steakhouse. And that's where Chad, that's his joint, right? That's where he goes. We had a private room downstairs. It was the band and their wives and girlfriends and the management team and their lawyer and a bunch of radio people. And it was just like full on. Nice. Now they came through Warner through a distributed label. So it wasn't like, I couldn't just say, I'm going to spend this much money. It was like, okay, we're going to do this. Here's your budget. And I'm like, I don't know if I can pull that off, but let's see what we can do. But I had a conversation with the band's manager, and it was a night where I'm sitting there going, there's no way we're staying on budget here, and I'll just have to deal with it when I get back. I can't say no. Sorry, yeah. Chad, we're not going to have another bottle of wine. Anyways, the manager asked
I love these
what
stories.
My budget was.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the night, I knew it was going to be over. And he said, you got a second? So the manager and tour manager took me up to the bar and said, all right, we've covered the tip. Or whatever. They said something that didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And they said, so when you get, I guess, yeah, we've covered the gratuity. So when you get the bill, and the gentleman here knows, you don't need to put a tip on it. Just get the bill, circle the tote, and sign it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. And the bill was exactly $1,000 less than what my budget was. And those fuckers knew what I had to, my budget was.
Yeah.
It was way more. Huh. And not only did they not put me in the position of going over budget, they put me at $1,000 under the budget for the dinner.
What a bunch of nice guys, huh?
Right?
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
Yeah, but if it's any other music rep, they're not getting that treatment. They're stiffening with that bill. It's the Steve Cody deal. That's what that is. It's because you're loved. That's why they do that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're one of
our favorites.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite people of all time. It's funny because when I think about you, when Locke told me that you were going to come on the show, I'm like, I love Steve Cody. And he's like, that's all you hear when you talk to people. I love Steve Cody too. Like, I don't know one person that has a bad thing to say about Steve Cody. That's why those things happen. That's karma, sure, because you're a good human.
It's a handful.
Who?
Probably a handful.
All right. Probably the same people I don't like too. Yeah. So we're good.
At the same time, we forgot their name. I'm glad that we're back in touch. It's been a long time since Locke, you and I were sort of off and on. I bump into you every now and then, but we kind of fell apart there for a minute. So I'm so happy to talk to you.
Well, when I saw your post about the hockey helps the homeless, I said to Dean, I sent Dean a note right away, and I said, let's get Cody on. Yeah. And he was like, absolutely. I've always appreciated the fact that you're not just a good guy, but you also go out of your way to give back. So we thought we would help a little bit here with the podcast, and hopefully you get a couple of bucks from this.
One of the best things that came out of working in that business was being involved with a bunch of different organizations, not-for-profits, charities, etc. Yeah. And nothing makes me feel better. And in this case, I'm raising money and I'm getting to play hockey with a bunch of my friends and meet a bunch of NHL players and crack such a couple of beers. It's just a great day.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you, dude. Right on. Always human in your perspective. Steve Cody, Hockey Helps the Homeless, evas.ca, I believe is the actual address. If you go to evas.ca, right-hand side, Hockey Helps the Homeless, you can go and donate. There are details there. Sorry, go ahead.
And Locke has asked me to send the link that and I'll do that as soon as we hang up here.
We'll put it in the description of the podcast, so we'll make sure people can donate to you as well. Awesome. Cody, great to see you, buddy. Really nice to have you here. And we'll have lunch soon. Yeah, we'll have
lunch. Let's do this
tomorrow. Are you still downtown? Are you downtown?
Yeah, Cabbage Town.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not far from you. I'll come say hi.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You were in Markham years ago.
Yeah, still split time, Markham and downtown. Depends on where my girlfriend's in town. So that's why I'm here.
Okay. None of my business.
No, I'll tell you all about it. It's a good time. We'll get together. Thanks, Steve.
See you guys.
There you go. Steve Cody, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe one of the most illustrious radio reps in the Canadian music history.
I love Cody.
One of the most well likes. Everybody knows if you're in that industry, you got people you like and people you don't like, and universal, right? It's usually it's pretty universal. That's the guy. That's the guy for the whole industry.
The thing about that industry though is you need to have a personality, right? That is that it relate, it's relatable because it's a tough business, right? You're traveling around trying to get people to add music, which is very subjective. And at times you're going to run into some stuff, you know, run into some conversations that, that are difficult, especially, you know, especially if you run into somebody that's getting pressure to be careful about what they add based on where the ratings are at. So it's a political landmine, what you have to negotiate those waters. And Cody was one, we're not just saying this because we're friends with Cody. Cody hands down was one of the best at it. And you brought up relationships and he managed those relationships so well.
Yeah.
And I think was so successful in the business because of the relationships he built, not only in the record industry with the people that worked in the business, but with the bands and management, but also with radio. That's why he was as successful as he was. He's a,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, throwback. Speaking of throwbacks, time for the locker room retro replay of the day. What do we have for ardentroofingsystems.com, sir?
This one's self-explanatory. Just going to play it.
The locker room retro replay.
Can we finally, because you finally even change down. It now. I get that Grant does it to exaggerate a point, right? Oh, you spent 7 years in grade 12.
I started grade 12 in 92. I graduated grade 12 in 94.
And you did 2 years of grade 12 and 3 years of grade 8?
Yes.
Sure. Sounds about right.
So you did 10 years of high school?
I don't know.
Why are you so dumb?
You think you'd be well educated.
I never once said I was smart.
Your buddy went to high school for 7 years? So what I got?
There's a lot. There's a lot of reasons why. There.
Yeah, I know. I just
he got the shunt.
Yeah.
In he lost a year there. Grade 12, he had some issues.
We all have friends like that.
He went to university in Lethbridge, and he didn't do so well, and so he was asked to leave. Did you just dump out on me? I think he just dumped. Oh, there he is. He's back. Anyway, Jimmy had some issues in school. Listen, I do want to, while we're waiting for Dean to come back here, I do want to mention this quickly about Arden Roof Systems sponsoring the locker room retro replay of the day. If you go to the webpage, ardentroofsystems.com, you can check out the link for the golf tournament, which is happening on Friday, July 5th at the Ranch Golf and Country Club. The tournament spots are filling up. Early bird pricing is on until the end of April. Okay. And then at that point, it goes up a bit. So if you were thinking about playing, Dean keeps promising that he's coming out, and there will be a point where we actually maybe auction off an opportunity to golf with Dean and I. So there's that. And yes, the webpage again, ardentroofsystems.com. I'm trying to drag this out in the hopes that Dean is going to return, but there is a solid chance he might not. So I'm just going to end the recording right now as we speak. I'm guessing his laptop died. Sayonara. Actually, hold on. He always plays the extra on the way out. So we'll do that. And you may get him back again because he may want to actually do the rest of the sponsorships.
The views and opinions expressed by guests on the show are their own and do not reflect the views of the creators, hosts, or that of Cryer Media or their partners. The show may cover sensitive topics and information and discuss triggering issues. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com. and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
Kids, I'm your eager beaver.
And I'm Mr. Grizzly.
If you love politics
or hate politics,
then have we the perfect podcast for you.
The True North Eager Beaver.
Incisive political commentary.
We keep you up to date
and give you the political and media literacy you seek
to help you
cut through the bovine fecal matter.
Facts first.
Sound analysis.
Sometimes I growl.
Sometimes I sass.
We impart civics and build community.
And we share some laughs along the way.
Being informed
and engaged has never been more fabulous.
Or sexy. Catch us on the Dean Blundell Network or on our YouTube channel.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Because democracy is something you do.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.